Thursday with a hop, a skip, and a hooray. Cause new comics have hit the shelf with so many titles that you can't sell. What's good or bad or just okay? Should you buy it now or wait for the trader? The indies you should know about, and where can you find all this out? Well, luckily this podcast has the answers to all that. They call it God Hates Comics, but does it really? Who knows? And if we're being honest, he's outnumbered by the heroes. So I'm pretty sure we got this. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to issue 42. 42, the answer to life, universe, and everything.
Goddamn right.
Yay!
Not I am Andrew, as always.
I'm Dusty.
I'm Vincent.
What?
I fucked you up. I'm still Vincent.
All right. So naturally, San Diego Comic-Con this past weekend, so there's a whole bunch of shit that came out of there that we're going to talk about, and we're only talking about half of it this week. We'll talk about the rest of it next week, the movie stuff. We're going to do comics only this week, and then we're going to do movie TV stuff, and including any subsequent movie TV announcements that have come since then as well,
because
I know a couple dropped today.
You know, interesting comic stuff, just in case.
Oh, yeah, if anything big does happen, which I'm not expecting it to, but we'll see. But in the intervening week, what have I been up to? I got caught up with Justice League. I had read Amazovirus, so I read the prequel to Darkseid War, and then I read Darkseid War 1 in anticipation of this week's Justice League 42, so I'll talk about those.
Is that Darkseid War 2?
Darkseid War Part 2.
Okay.
But, yeah, so I'll talk about those a little bit later, but what else have I been up to? I didn't see Ant-Man yet. Dusty's seeing it tonight.
Yeah. That's why we gotta keep this short and sweet.
We do. At least your parts of it.
Yeah.
But I did start watching a couple of new shows. I started watching the new Ultraman and the new Death Note because Crunchyroll very nicely simulcast those and then makes them immediately available to their Premium Plus subscribers, which is what I am now.
Do you pay more, or is it just because you pay?
I think it's you have a free membership that will get you everything eventually, and not all the live action stuff, and then there's the anime membership, which is now just the premium membership, which I think gets you everything, and again, there's less of a delay, and then there's the premium plus membership where you get everything, and I have the premium plus membership, and it costs me a whopping $13 a month.
Dude.
I know, breaking the bank, man.
So rich, man.
So rich. but no, I started watching the new Ultraman. The last Ultraman shows were kind of sketch. This one actually has a little bit of promise. And then
I want to watch the Ultraman show that Takashi Miyake directed.
Which one is that?
He directed one. He's the same guy that's done like Visitor Q and H.G. the Killer and a bunch of other fucked
now
up
you're gonna
Japanese
make me,
movies.
Now you're going to make me have to look that up. What's the one he did? Ultra.
Awesome. He did an Ultraman show. That's all I know.
You guys might as well be speaking French to me.
Or Japanese, no less.
Japanese movies we're talking.
But no, so Crunchyroll started doing those simulcasts, and that's pretty cool, because like I said, if you're strong-willed enough, you can watch it live, like, as it airs in Japan, or maybe a slight delay, because there's no commercials, but it's subbed almost immediately, and then, like I said, like, I watched the first episode of Death Note yesterday, and then last night, in our time, the new episode aired, or I guess technically it would have been, like, this morning at, like, 4 a.m.,
Is that where the strong will comes in, that you have to wake up at 4 in the morning?
Yeah, to watch a show that I don't have. Like, WWE recently live-streamed a show in Japan, and it aired here at 4:30 in the morning. And I was like, nope.
Fuck that.
Nope. I'll watch
like
it when I wake up.
The British Open is this week, right?
Yeah.
And there's...
About, like, 6 hours ahead or something.
Yeah, there's been advertisements where it's like, you know, first tee time, 3:33 in the morning. I'm like, who the fuck is going to wake up to watch this shit?
People.
People will.
It's true. We've actually gotten questions at work to see if we're going to be opening early. It's like, no.
No.
No, we're not going to be opening early.
But yeah, but it's cool. And so I really started watching those, and I started reading the Death Note manga. It's been a long day.
Well, technically you are reading.
Technically, yes, I am, but... Now, I have all six of the black editions of Death Note, which is the whole run, so I've been going back. I've started reading those because I watched the old live-action movies, I watched some of the anime, and now I'm watching this new show, so it makes me want to kind of read along and see how it's different.
As much as I've seen of Death Note, which is admittedly a whole shitload, I mean, I never really cared for it. It's just Okay.
I like the idea because I'm gonna spoil it. I'm gonna spoil at least some of the older stuff for you. I don't know about this new show.
Okay. Not spoilers.
Oh no, for a show that's the movies that are, you know, 8+ years old. But I like the aspect of it's a guy that's given this kind of ultimate power. And
is he given a death note?
He's basically, the way it works is these Japanese death gods drop, one of them drops his note into the human world solely because he's bored.
Yeah.
He's literally, like, he's in the Shinigami realm, nobody does anything, everybody's bored. So he drops his death note onto Earth because he thinks it's going to be fun. Like, that's his sole motivation.
Yeah.
Like, at least originally. It may change as the series goes on. But that's what he says to start with, is he's like, dude, I was super fucking bored. And so I thought this would be fun. And so the guy starts off with this kind of noble crusade of, well,
yeah,
I'm going to try to make the world, he's like, I'm going to make the world a better place.
Yeah.
And so he starts killing, like, criminals and wanted criminals and people in prison and things like that. But the way it works is that when you write their name down, they die of a heart attack, unless you specify otherwise.
Yeah.
And so, like, the Japanese authorities immediately realize that 55 people in a week died from heart attacks, and that there's probably something not right about that, especially since they all happen to be criminals. So the police, despite what he's doing, get onto his case, and they introduce a kind of super detective named L. That's how he's dressed.
Hold on. So the cops realize that criminals are dying of heart attacks.
Yes.
So they decide to take on the God of Death?
No.
Because it's not the God of Death.
Because it's not the God of Death. It's the kid writing names in the death note.
Because
he has the death note.
He didn't do it smart. He didn't go like, this guy gets killed this way, this guy gets killed this way. Instead, he's just like,
well,
I'm
part of
this,
it, part of it,
this,
at least in the manga, is that he wants people to know there's somebody doing it.
Yeah.
That's it's not given that way in the as heavily in the movies, but in the books, he starts off specifically wanting people to know what he's doing, which
yeah.
is why he keeps it a certain way. But so the cops realize that all these people have died. So this kind of, like I said, this super sleuth they have, that's kind of a weird, almost autistic kid, kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of very much in his own world, kind of operates on his own level. He's actually already kind of following it, but then the cops involve him as well, trying to figure out who this guy is. And so it's kind of this would-be noble mission of this guy trying to make the world a better place, who naturally falls off the path and ends up doing things, not necessarily for the right reasons,
yeah.
Against this super detective that knows that this guy, because the way the Death Note works is you need their name and their face. So L realizes, well, if my name can never get out, my face really, like, he realizes the danger he's simply in, almost just by existing, that he could be killed by this guy with absolutely no say in the matter. So it's kind of the one guy on one side is trying to figure out who this guy is so he can kill him, while the other guy is trying to figure out who he is so he can stop and save himself, basically. And so it's an interesting thing, and I'm finally going to sit down and try to read all of it.
Nice.
And then I've seen the old movies. They kind of truncate the whole thing
yeah.
down
yeah.
to two-hour movies. So, when you've got 12 volumes of manga,
yeah, it's
you're losing a little bit.
I've watched most of the anime.
The anime is the anime, from what I've heard, is a fairly close adaptation,
yeah.
but I've never sat down and watched the whole thing. And I've not read the whole thing, so I can't say how faithful it is. But
is Snoo Snoo a thing
that's
that exists?
Snoo Snoo?
Yeah. Can they die by Snoo Snoo?
I don't know if he tries that. I can't say for sure.
Death by Snoo Snoo.
Also, who was that guy you were talking about? The director?
Takashi Miyake.
Takashi.
TAKASHIMIIKE.
Say that again.
TAKASHIMIIKE. Yeah.
All right, let's find out what he did here.
So this guy is so fucked up that you know the movie Hostel? You've seen Hostel, I'm assuming? Maybe they were
of Hostel.
The movie? Okay. Well, in the movie, there's the part where like the main character gets taken to the part where they're gonna fucking kill him.
Yeah.
And there's a dude dressed in all black coming out about to get into a limo. And the guy looks at him and he's like, "Hey man, how is it in there?" And the guy looks at him and says, "It'll make you spend all of your money." Well, that guy is Takashi Miyake, implying that he's in there killing people.
Gotcha.
Because he's a world-renowned, like, fucked-up-ass horror director. Like, I would recommend his movies, but only if you want to psychologically damage yourself.
Damn.
He directed 2 episodes of Ultraman Max, which I believe is also on Crunchyroll. So issue episodes 15 and 16.
Right, so
that's strange.
You watch them, you tell us if they fuck you up.
I will try to do my best. But
yeah, I mean, I've heard his TV show is not going to be as bad as...
Oh yeah, he's not gonna go crazy with a children's superhero program.
Yeah.
But
either
of
y'all seen Ichi the Killer?
Ichi the Killer is fucked up.
All right, yeah. This guy's face hits the goddamn wall and just starts sliding down the wall while his lips are still moving because he's trying to talk. That's amazing.
That's cool.
Yes, The Visitor Q is much worse. So don't watch it.
I won't.
Okay, moving on. What did I do this week?
I don't know. What did you do? This
I
week?
Read a few comics. Drifter. I read the first trade for Drifter by Ivan Brandon and Nick Klein, and this comic is fucking awesome. It's kind of like a Western, but set in the future and like on a random planet. So there's aliens and shit, but this dude crash landed on this planet, and he wakes up, and he's underwater, and he escapes. Shit happens, basically, and he's no idea what's going on, and somebody shoots him, and then he wakes up, and he's in the hospital. The sheriff has saved him, and, like, it's been 3 days since he was unconscious and shit. And then he's talking to her, and he's like, yeah, my fucking ship just crashed here, like, maybe a week ago, you know? Like, it can't have been long, you know? And so he takes her to the crash site, and she's like, yeah, that ship's been here for over a year.
Huh. Whoops!
And he's like, what the fuck? So, yeah, that was the first volume of it, but it was really, really good. I'd highly recommend picking it up. So, these are the same guys that did Viking.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, really cool.
And Nick Klein, he's a guy that's been around for a while, too. He used to do Doc Savage for DC back in the day.
Nice. And then finished off the first volume of Secret Six.
The old one, the original. I guess the
prequel miniseries?
It's
the first two. It's the Villains United series, and then it's the first Secret Six.
So you got the trades.
I've got those big, nice ones they put out. I just got the second one, too, so I'm about to start on that. Just a few single issues since the last week, but haven't read too much. Other than that, I actually started watching Knights of Sidonia, which is the Netflix original anime, and it's pretty fucking awesome. Like, humanity has been pretty much wiped out, and there's now a few of these ships that are floating through space. The only one we have seen is Sidonia. So there might be others out there. I think they briefly talked about in the beginning there were others out there. I don't know if there's any left. They don't really talk about that. But there's like only a few, like 1,000-something people left in Sidonia. But we're at war with this stuff called Ghana. And they're pretty fucking crazy because they take on human forms, like giant human forms. So it's like a mech show. There's giant robots and shit like that. They have to fight in space. And it's fucking cool, though, I will say, you know. I'm really enjoying it so far. Actually, I started watching it because Joe Eisenman always talks about it, saying how badass it is. So,
cool.
I like it. I'm like 10 episodes in.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Vince? What you up to?
Jeez, what the hell did I do this week?
I did see Terminator Genesis.
Yeah, I was just about to bring that up. I guess we both saw Terminator.
We both saw it. And we both, I have more issues with it than you do.
Well,
but we both agreed that it was more entertaining than we thought it was going to be.
Absolutely. Especially because, like, the reviews have been, like, blasting it since it came out.
Yeah, the reviews were just like, this movie's trash, but I will admit
it was like, I was watching it, and I'm just, like, waiting for, like, the moment where, like, things go to shit, and it never actually happened. I mean, there's some, you definitely...
My biggest issue is that, like, the movie itself, I will give it, is extremely consistent in whatever it is. But my issue is, I have three things. It was Connor. I didn't like the actor they had for Connor or Reese. I didn't think John Connor was appropriately menacing enough. Like, I never felt like he was the villain. And Kyle Reese is, that guy's one of the most wooden actors on the planet.
Jake Courtney. Australians.
I don't know. Like, his whole point in that movie is just kind of look shocked the whole time. Just like Keanu Reeves.
I actually didn't think he did that bad.
And I will admit, he's not as bad as some of my friends have made him out to be, but I think if he had been a stronger actor that had a little bit better chemistry with everybody, mm-hmm. the movie itself would have taken a big step up. Because the fact that he did... Because him and Emilia Clarke had absolutely no chemistry at all. And my bigger issue, though, is that there were a lot of fucking plot holes in this movie. Now, I'm sure some of them were intended for sequels that they're probably not getting now, but...
Well, you know what? This movie's profitable. I mean, it's not, like, hugely profitable.
But it's making
made
money.
It's making money.
But it's...
And some. So.
The biggest issues for me are the one I talked to you about, where did old Arnold... Who sent old Arnold back?
Yeah.
You can draw a lot of theories, but for me, him... The Terminator's coming back to 1973 is the whole crux of the past in this movie, and they never explain how that came about. They purposely leave it ambiguous. And for me, like you said, that wasn't a huge issue for you, but for me,
honestly,
the crux of the past. Change
it. I really don't think they needed to explain it, just because if they explain it, then it kind of makes things... Like, if there was a scene in that movie early on that explained that they sent a Terminator back to the past, it kind of lessens the impact of seeing that the Terminator's already there.
They don't need to do it like chronologically or anything, but they could have at some point in the movie fucking explained what happened.
I don't know, but the
bigger issue is that they go back to the 84, they jump to the future, and Connor somehow still exists, but he shouldn't.
Well, I think it's kind of implied that the timeline isn't a singular, it's not linear. That there are kind of alternate realities and alternate dimensions or timelines or however you want
to
put it.
I understand that to an extent.
Of,
like, you know, they talked about, you know, like, you know, the what's the term Arnold used?
The nexus yeah.
points or whatever. And it's, so they skirted around a lot of it, but it was on purpose, and they just, I don't know, it bothered me, because I was like, none of this should be happening. And
I don't know, like, it's kind of funny, because
let's talk some comics, yes. I got 30 minutes.
We got, it's plenty of time, give us another minute.
We have like two comics to talk about, Connor shit. Anyway, what was I saying? We were talking about this earlier in the week, and you were just like, man, like, it's really not upsetting, but it's like, I was
annoyed by the plot
holes,
yes.
And I'm just like, Nexus, that's it. Like, there's one, like, there's literally a two-word answer that explains.
No, that doesn't explain anything.
It explains enough of what happens.
No,
like,
that is
the Nexus point is a point in time where things change, and if you're there, you witness, like, you that's why he kind of has
again, the
of
fact
time.
The past has changed is not in question. It's how it changed. More specifically, why it changed. And more specifically, who changed it. I have no doubt that the past changed. That is not in disagreement. But my point, that's not my issue. I am fully aware that the past changed. My issue is that they never go into they never quantify how it changed. Why it changed, rather. And so, yeah, that's my problem. Nexus Point doesn't explain that.
It'll always, in every Terminator movie, it changes. Like, in every.
And they explain how they change.
Do they?
Yes!
Okay, I guess.
That's why Terminator 1 and 2 are so well beloved, because they treat time travel like it's not fucking retarded.
This is
Excuse
true.
Me. That's a bad way to put it, but seriously.
Oh my god, really? You have to, like, respect the art of time travel? Come on.
Well, if you're not even
going to
try, you're just going to throw it around, then it's just lazy. It's basically, if you wanted to make a movie that had an old Arnold Schwarzenegger as a Terminator, there were way easier ways to quantify that.
Okay.
Outside giving me a vague explanation of why, if he's here, deal with it. And like I said, the movie was still enjoyable, but that annoyed me greatly, because it's the trailers, the whole crux is that the past is different.
If there's anything that should be bothersome in the entire, like, all five movies plus TV shows plus whatever of the Terminator, it's the fact that Skynet somehow remembers these changes. Because it always seems like when they do something, send something back into the past, and they stop it, there's a counter to that. You know, like in Terminator 1, they send the original Terminator. In Terminator 2, they send the T-1000. It's like, how do you know that these things are, like, how do you know these changes are happening? You know?
How does Skynet know?
Yeah.
Because it's coming from the future in the world where those changes took place. So, like, in Terminator, it's coming back to kill Sarah Connor because she will give birth to John Connor. Now, the first one gets a little messy in as much as it's built on
What I'm saying is, are there, like, records somewhere? Like, if Skynet was created after the Terminator was sent back in time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how does it know that it was built based on the Terminator that
it
was sent back in 84?
Or it does know that. It doesn't.
That's what I'm saying.
And that's the thing, is the timeline. In the first one, it sends the Terminator back because it wants to kill Sarah Connor to prevent John Connor from arriving.
Okay,
from
and
ever
it fails.
Existing.
And it fails.
And it fails because John Connor continues to exist. But
so how does Skynet in the future, where it sends a Terminator back from in 1995 or whatever year they sent
mm-hmm.
the Terminator 2?
Because in that, if you just watch Terminator 2, the arm and the chip survive, which means that Skynet itself is still created. Because in the first one, all they're trying to do, really, is save Sarah Connor. They're not really trying to stop Skynet.
Yeah. Yes.
So, because in the first one, Skynet's almost an afterfact to the fact that her survival is most important.
The fact that at the end of Terminator 1, there's no Skynet. Like,
yeah, there
is. They mention Skynet, but they don't say how it happened.
They don't mention, it's not the plot of part 1. So part 2 deals with the actual, is the first movie that deals with dealing with the creation of Skynet. And so that's where you get into that whole situation where they said, they're like, okay,
so that's
this
what
moment.
I'm saying. If in Terminator 2, if that Skynet was destroyed, how is there a future Skynet that knows?
The point that I've taken from all of them is that the creation of Skynet is inevitable. And Terminator 3 actually deals with that to an extent.
It
basically says that there's actually nothing you can do to stop this. You just need to be better equipped to deal with it. And then Salvation is a little bit more of that outside being terrible. But it and so 5 kind of muddies the whole thing because it jumps over all of those
to go back to
84.
It's a sequel to Terminator 2. It's not a sequel to Salvation.
And even then, it's a really messy sequel to Terminator 2.
I'll agree with that, but they have billed it as 3 and 4 basically don't exist.
And the fact is, even if they had, I mean, it doesn't really change the plot because the plot is that the timeline changes. So, and it's the more and more we talk about this, the more and more confused I'm getting. So we need to move on. So that said, we're going to talk about some comics now. So our overall pick of the week. This is a weird week because, like, for me, I almost got nothing.
I got two
books.
This was
Andrew apparently just doesn't read good books.
Fuck you! I read two awesome books this week. One of which you guys aren't even reading.
Oh, snap.
So, burn. You got nothing for that, Dusty. Shut up.
Is that really an application of it's awesome?
It's so good you guys
are
even
something else.
Don't give me your shit. I've got time for this, man. So our pick of the week, though, is Secret 6-4. This is the continuation of... kind of the continuation of the relaunch of the revamp of Gail Simone's Secret Six. they were arguably her most beloved creation back in the old DC universe. Villains United kind of created this kind of runaway success that nobody ever really kind of anticipated. And so she's finally gotten to bring it back. And so the first three issues were kind of putting together and assembling and showing off this new team, which is who's our team?
It's
Catman,
Big Shot. Black Alice, except she's not called Black Alice.
She's just Alice. But she's Black, the Black Alice character. There's a former Talon in there.
Yeah, there's a former Talon.
A new character named Porcelain, and the new Ventriloquist.
Yes.
The new character Porcelain is actually revealed in this issue to be gender fluid.
Yep.
A pretty big moment for people that identify as such, because that's really the first instance I think of a character being like that in comics.
The funny thing is that, I mean, I was wondering where it was going to go when Big Shot, because basically he shows up and they're like, who are you?
Because to that point, Porcelain has appeared to be
female.
A female.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they're all trying to hide, they're getting their stuff together, this guy walks out. And they're all just like, who are you?
And he's like, oh, I'm
Porcelain. And Catman's like, no, we know him. And it's just like, yeah, it seems like some days I feel like a woman and other days I don't. And so Big Shot goes... whoa, that's not right. And everybody, like Ramona's like, whoa, Simone's going there.
Like,
and then, but no, he reaches into the car, he pulls out his hat, and he's like, man's got to look nice in the hat. He's moving to a new place. Just puts that. Like, I was like, whoa, like the ultimate bait and switch there. But so that's our Secret 16, and kind of the first issues were them kind of in that prison and getting out.
Yeah.
And then the third issue is them kind of trying to figure out who this Mockingbird after them is. And at the end of that issue, spoilers now, February, you find out the Mockingbird is the Riddler. And so in this issue, Mocking, you kind of get the prequel of leading up to what happened in issue 3. And so we kind of flash back, and we find the story at that point is that...
Wait a minute. This was a flashback issue?
Yeah.
Okay, I was one, like, honestly, I was reading this, and my big problem with the book was that I'm like, I feel like I'm missing something. Like, this book is, like there's something I missed between issues, and I guess I just didn't catch on.
Because, yeah, it's before, it's how they get to the house.
Yeah, because that's the thing, it's like...
Because issue 3 is them at the house already.
Yeah, that's why, I was like, the last issue, they're already at the house, or are they moving
four,
to the house?
4 is them getting to the house.
Yeah.
So three other beloved characters, specifically two beloved characters, actually from the old Secret Six, also make their returns in this book.
No, I think it's three.
It's three.
Yeah,
because it's
Jeanette,
Scandal,
Jeanette,
Savage,
Scandal, Savage,
and
Ragdoll
all show up for the first time in this book. And they are all apparently under the workings of Mockingbird.
And
although,
they're like the strangest assassins ever, because they're like, they're following them, they're tailing them, and everyone's like, we're being tailed. And
everybody knows they're being tailed.
Yeah, they know they're being tailed, and then like, they're like, someone's like, all right, we gotta get ready, they're here. And then they knock on the door, and they've got like a tray of cookies. They're like, hey.
And they're just like, hey.
Talk.
And they literally just go, so our employer would really like it if you guys go live in his prison for a year. And they're like, what? No. And they're just like, all right, we'll have to do this the hard way. But like, they try to just talk to them first.
With a tray of cookies. And it's actually funny, because Talon gets into the fight a little bit later on than everyone else.
Because
and
she was eating.
She literally says, she's like, sorry, I was eating cookies.
But she has to write down what she says.
Yeah, she doesn't
talk,
so she writes down, you know, sorry, eating cookies or whatever.
And holds it up to Catman, and he's just like, oh.
Catman's like, I know.
And so they have a big, kind of, this issue's a big drawn-out fight between the three assassins and the Secret Six. And story-wise, I think this is awesome. I think it's kind of firing on all cylinders. I think it's really everything that old fans want, but it's accessible enough for new people to kind of swing right back into it.
Yeah.
Without too much trouble. My only issue with this issue is the art. Yeah, it's, man.
I'm not really a big fan of Ken Lashley.
He used to draw a lot more in like a classic kind of superhero style, but he's kind of adapted to this kind of washed out style now, and man,
it's just not
tough to follow.
I don't think it's bad, it just doesn't fit. And especially
it really doesn't.
After like, alright, so we got two issues that decidedly, the first two issues
are Lashley.
And they looked a lot worse than the
half. Yeah, they were a lot smudgier and a lot rougher than this.
So, but anyway, Eaglesham took over for number 3.
And he's a completely different style.
Yeah, completely.
Because he used to draw the old Secret Six.
But it was, I mean, like, just big. It was almost like a throwback to, like, the 50s.
Just the big, bold, kind of classic-looking characters.
But then...
This issue, the first half, is back to Lashley. And then the second half, I think, is Tom Derenick.
Who is aping Eaglesham. So the styles don't mix.
Like, if Derenick was just the backup for Eaglesham, it'd be perfect.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't have any issues with that at all. But Lashley and Eaglesham's styles are so different that it really creates... And if they had told two kind of distinct sections of the story, I think it would have worked a lot better. But it's literally
just
one story, and it just it's really jarring. And admittedly, the fight with Ragdoll, Savage, and Jeanette looks awesome by Derenick. He does a great job with it, but... It's just a little kind of annoying that they couldn't just kind of get Derenick to draw the whole fucking thing.
There has to be some sort of, maybe it's like a legal thing or it's a contract thing or something.
I don't know. Maybe it just became a time thing. Who knows? But I think it's going to be interesting going forward, especially now that we've got a few more fan favorite characters back in the mix too. And
at least we know they're around.
They're around. So
yeah.
The classic six, I think. Are all there now, sort of.
Except for Bane.
Bane's not one of the first original six, though, is he?
I think so.
No, he's not. Dusty, the original six, who are they?
The original Secret Six?
Yes. It's Catman.
It's Catman, Deadshot, Vandal Savage, Ragdoll, Knockout.
Knockout.
And...
Cheshire.
Cheshire's originally in it.
Okay,
all right.
So you're
only for a little while.
So we're not. So we're not even close to the original Secret Six.
What I'm saying is that the original Secrets, like I never read those, like Villains United and the first.
Bane's not at the beginning of the series. Either.
He's not.
No,
sure?
He's not the beginning.
He joins up,
but he does show up in the second volume.
Okay.
So
he does
come. Like, cover with the second volume. So yeah, he shows up, but he's not in it at first.
Okay. So we've got Catman back on the... Because of the current Secret 16, the only one that's a big classic member is Catman.
Yeah.
And then now we've got Scandal Savage and Ragdoll back in the mix. So they're kind of slowly turning up. But I like this team she's got together, and I like the new characters she got. They're all distinct. They're all cool, and I think it's good so far.
Very interesting. I mean...
Yeah.
Parademon was in the first one.
Oh, and the big thing in issue 3 that's revealed is that... What's his name? Big Shot?
Big Shot.
Is probably Elongated Man.
Oh, yeah.
Because in issue 3, they have a big moment where he's talking to Mockingbird. So, Mr. Big Shot knows who Mockingbird is and is apparently working with him in some capacity. That's issue 3. It's not an issue 4 spoiler. But he calls him Mr. Dimby, which gives the implication that he is Elongated Man. Which is, again, another character that people have kind of been wondering where he's at. And Gail Simone handling him, I think, is a great idea.
Yeah.
So,
Secret Six. Kind of funny because he showed up briefly in like one of the first few issues of whenever they were relaunching New 52.
Yeah.
And they mentioned him doing something else. You know? So it's funny to me to see all these little things like how Robin was, Red Robin was never actually Robin. And
Weird shit like that.
I feel like he was in Agents of Shade, the Frankenstein book.
Ray Palmer was an agent. So yeah, but Secret 6-4 gets a big thumbs up for me if you can get past the art.
It gets like a half.
I haven't read it yet, so it gets nothing from me yet.
I'm digging the story though. The story is compelling enough for me to come back and hopefully.
Oh yeah.
Lashley at Space City Con and just be like, dude,
stop.
Get an eraser and tighten up your shit. You know? But no. So, Dusty, why don't you run through your picks next?
All right. This week, I got a few. So, I've got Invincible 121. Yeah, well, shut up. You know, Invincible 121, which has this strange reboot coming.
Yes, very strange, but we've talked about that before, and we'll probably... I think when that issue comes out, I might pick it up or borrow your copy or somebody's and try to figure out what the deal
is.
What
the fuck is going on?
What the damn deal is.
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't know.
When's the reboot start?
124?
A couple months. It's kind of weird, because he's going to remember everything that's happened.
He's going to go back in time and remember everything.
So it's a reboot, but not a reboot? You know? It's like, okay.
It's like Terminator Genesis.
Yeah.
He goes back in time and remembers a timeline that hasn't happened yet.
Okay. So after that, I've got Dark Horse Presents number 12, which has part 2 of Black Past from Fabian. And I can't remember which artist he's got drawing this, so I apologize for that. Then I've got Big Trouble in Little China, number 13. This is the new arc with words from Fred Van Lint and art by Joe Eisma. So I'll be picking this next arc up.
Cool.
Then I've got Robin, Son of Batman, number 2.
This has been really good, I hear.
Yeah.
Well,
the first issue was good, too.
You know,
I read it.
Cool.
It's definitely solid.
Cool.
I
just fucking love Gleason's Robin, so like, you could.
He's doing a good job of basically picking up where, what's his name, Tomasi took off. The only problem, if I don't know.
Yeah, don't spoil it.
Okay, I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah,
we gotta talk about it. It's gonna be a little problem with it.
Okay, moving on. I've got The Mantle number 2. And in fact, I remember that actually might be number 3, not number 2.
That's Ed Brisson, right?
That is Ed Brisson, and it's basically like the Mantle is the superhero, okay?
Right.
And whoever is chosen to wield those powers, kind of like Green Lantern, it chooses a new thing whenever you die.
Mm-hmm.
Except there's the guy that goes around and kills the bearer of the Mantle, okay? And it doesn't matter if you've been the bearer of the Mantle for a year or fucking 10 minutes, he will find you and he will fucking kill you. And that's what happens in the first issue. Is dude's walking along with his girlfriend. Bam, get superpowers all the fucking sudden. And then other people show up to help him fight and explain, hey, we've got to help you. We've got to, this guy's been coming after you now, you know. And then next fucking page, dude shows up. And the guy's like, I can handle it. And no, you cannot. And so he gets killed. And so all of his fucking super, then the guy fucking disappears, you know. And all of the leftover superheroes are standing there like, well, shit, now I got to go find the next thing, person that the Mantle chooses.
So there's the superheroes trying to protect the Mantle, but then there's the guy trying to kill the Mantle.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to pick up the trailer.
And then here's where it gets cool in the first issue. Like, as soon as they say, like, all right, now we got to go find the next person, they turn around and the guy's girlfriend gets chosen.
Nice.
Yeah. So now it's her, and she's the new Mantle. So now they've got her, they can protect her and actually get her trained and stuff.
That's cool. I might have to check this out.
Yeah. And then I've got the
Ed Brisson also jumping in on the new Batman series that we'll talk about a little bit later.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be fucking cool. Island, number one. And honestly, I can't even remember who fucking wrote or drew this issue, because it's going to be changing. Like, it's going to be like an anthology series. It's oversized, stuff like that. And each issue is going to have a different creative team on it. But it looks really cool, and I know there's some really cool creative teams announced for it. You know, so I'm really looking forward to this. And then I've also got Moon Knight number 17. And not much to say about that, other than it's, I love the fucking comic. So,
still good.
You know. Vince, moving on.
Well, I've got this week Hail Hydra number 1, which is Rick Remender's, I guess, continuation of his Captain America Nomad storyline that basically started with his run in Captain America a couple years ago. You know, I wasn't exactly sure what to expect out of this book, because it's listed under Battle World, not Last Days.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually interesting, because this is one of the few books that that takes place with a character, that has a character from the 616 that remembers the way it used to be.
Oh, really?
Because basically the storyline is that the new Nomad, who is also Ian Rogers, Steve's son from Dimension Z.
Adopted son.
Yeah, his adopted son. Basically got onto a Hydra Infinity elevator, like, to escape something. And when he comes out of the elevator, he's on Battleworld. And he doesn't know what the hell's going on. He just knows that things are different. You know, he kind of runs into, like, a local or someone that's there. And he learns these things like Hydra was founded by, or New York was founded by Hydra, and they've been around since the 40s or the 50s. And basically, they round up mutants and they round up people. And if they're not in line with the Hydra way of doing things, they re educate them. And by re educate them, they kill them. You know, that's what they're doing. So it's pretty interesting, because it's the same character that Remender's been writing, but in this new place, and it actually seems more like a natural extension of his previous series than just a new book.
Cool.
Which is also cool, because this is supposed to be Remender's last
Marvel stuff for a while.
Yeah,
you know. So it's kind of cool to see him take on that. As I don't actually have it listed, but Carol Corr is another book, because it doesn't take place, like, it doesn't star characters that remember the way things used to be, but this is another book where things are a little bit different, just because they're actually questioning what's going on. Because basically, in the world of Secret Wars, everyone believes Doom is God,
right?
And Doom is all knowing, and Doom is all powerful, and blah blah blah. But Captain Marvel and her, I guess, flying mates or whatever you call them, her team, her squad. Their question.
Her core.
Her core. Yeah, there you go.
Her Carol Corr.
Her Carol Corr.
I don't know where I got that one from.
I'm not sure.
They're actually questioning his omnipotence and
right.
his power, and they're saying, you know what, things aren't the way they're telling us they are, and
right.
we're trying to figure out what's going on. So that it's pretty cool to see. Like,
cool.
And it's given me hope for this book, because, again, like Remender, this is Kelly Sue the Comics'
last big Marvel work for a while.
You know, so it's kind of interesting to see what's going on.
Yeah, cool.
And my last pick is Hawkeye number 22, the long-awaited final issue. I'm not going to spoil anything. The long-awaited final issue of Matt Fraction and David Aljo's run in Hawkeye. And
took 5 months, I think.
Yeah, it took a while. It's really...
Now, 21 came out about 5 months ago.
Okay.
But then before that, 20 was like 3 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a damn good book. It's really well done. I do think the fact that it took 5 months for this to get out hurts it a bit.
Oh, shit.
Because it's not exactly...
And it's coming out with no fanfare.
Yeah, I mean, it's oversized, but it's like 33 pages. Yeah. You know, so it's not like a huge, like, you're not going to be reading this thing forever. But the artist type, the it wraps up all the loose storylines that had, you know, had kind of presented themselves throughout Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it ends, like, it just ends really well. Trying to be spoiler free.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's it, and the art is very cinematic. The writing is great. I mean, it's, I'm hoping Fraction and Audra do something because that would be great, because these two guys really seem to work well together.
Uh-huh.
Because Fraction's writing style and Audra's art style just, they flush.
They should just launch a comic called Hawk Guy.
Hawk, for real.
Give him black hair and like a red upside down
arrow,
and we're good.
Yeah.
Although if you do need your Hawkeye fix, I do extremely highly recommend Lemire and
not to crap on what Lemire is doing, because he's doing awesome work too.
Yeah.
It's just this really is one of those series that's probably going to go down.
Such good work, they're getting him number one already.
Yeah, damn good.
Mm-hmm.
That damn good.
Every issue is a number one. What issue is coming out tomorrow? Next
number one.
Number one.
1.2. It's 1.4 this week. So it's just me now. But no, Hawkeye is that book that I'm probably going to go back and reread.
Yeah, and I need to finish it. I felt like the last issue I read was the issue before Pizza Dog.
I need to go back
like
and reread the whole thing.
10.
Really?
Yeah, issue Pizza Dog was number 11.
Fuck.
Yeah, we need to get on this.
Yeah.
I need to get a fucking tablet so I can read this stuff fast.
It's actually, it's one of those, like, there aren't many series where I'm like, I just finished and it's like, man, I want to go back and read it again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, part of that is due to the fact that I had to wait so long to fucking get to the last issue.
Yeah.
But I don't see myself, after reading Uncanny X-Men 600, going back and reading all of Bendis' X-Men crap.
Exactly. Like, I have Geoff Johns' Justice League trades, first lot of them. And it occurred to me that I was like, dude, you have the single issues. You're never going to go back and read those trades. Like, and I'm doing that with a lot of trades. Like, exactly. So, like, I'm probably going to go back and ditch a good chunk of my trades, because I'm just going to be like, I'm never going to go back and fucking read you. Ever. But anyway, speaking of Johns and Justice League, since I'm talking about rereading things, the only other issue I bought this week was Justice League 42, which is the second part of the Darkseid War, which will have the Anti-Monitor basically facing off against Darkseid with the Justice League caught in the middle. This story returns the Justice League to full strength under John's writing. We have the Big Seven he introduced in Justice League 1 all back together, plus Shazam and... Take that back. It's the Aquaman's not here, but it's the other six, plus Shazam and the new Power Ring. They're all there. I don't recall seeing Aquaman in here. She is the Jessica Lopez, I think her name is. Jessica Cruz. And she got Power Ring's ring after Sinestro killed him in Forever Evil. Sorry if that's a spoiler.
I still don't know who Power Ring is.
Ring is the Green Lantern equivalent on the Crime Syndicate.
Gotcha.
And so Sinestro kills him in Forever Evil. Like, literally just, like, bitch slaps the shit out of him and just kills him. And Power Ring is all just like, thank you, because now the ring's gone and he can die in peace. Because the ring's almost a parasite in that world. So she gets it, and the Justice League has been working with her to try to contain it and make it work. So it's her and Hal Jordan. Hal Jordan's back in the fold now. Plus Batman, Superman, Lex Luthor, and Captain Cold are both still around too.
I thought Jordan was kind of on the lam.
This apparently takes place between, what was the New Gods Green Lantern story? There was a big thing that was called
Godhead,
yes. This takes place between Godhead and where Hal Jordan's at now,
gotcha.
Seemingly. And so it's a good amount of people. Like I said, Luthor, Captain Cold, and Superman are all still involved too. Aquaman is off the beaten path, but I know Johns has another big Justice League Aquaman story coming, so that'll happen sooner rather than later. But this is where things start to ramp up. You start to see kind of who's on whose side. We get introduced to Scott Free in this, the Miracle Man. Mr. Miracle. Miracle Man, something else entirely. And we're introduced to Darkseid's daughter, Darkseid's daughter's mother, and we kind of get the gist of why Anti-Monitor wants to fight Darkseid and why Darkseid wants to go back to Earth. Earth is basically the only planet that's ever successfully repelled Darkseid, and it bothers him. And the Anti-Monitor wants to return back to the way he was before he was the Anti-Monitor, and he realizes the only way to do that is basically have Darkseid destroy him. And so Darkseid's daughter is trying to help him, Darkseid, while Darkseid's daughter's mother is working with the Anti-Monitor to try to bring down Darkseid. So you've got Darkseid and his daughter on one side, his, I guess, ex-wife and the Anti-Monitor on the other side, and the Justice League gets caught in the middle.
How this reads better than your explanation.
It's tough to... It's a lot of information in the two issues, so I highly recommend picking it up. But basically, it's both... Basically, it's the Anti-Monitor side and the Darkseid side both kind of about to compound on each other, and the Justice League is just kind of trapped in the middle of the whole conflict. Superman and Lex Luthor end up trapped on Apokolips, and the big thing that happens at the end of issue 42, this is a spoiler, you guys aren't reading it, so I'm going to do it, that is where Batman ends up on Metron's chair. Basically, Wonder Woman is dealing with Metron, and she's got him in the lasso, and she's just like, what do we need to do? She's like, there has to be something we can do, and Metron just kind of goes, the chair, you have to use the chair. And so she pulls him out of the chair, and then Batman jumps into it before it can go anywhere. And so Batman... the other big spoiler that was talked about for this week is that Batman learns the identity of the Joker. I don't know if you guys saw that cycle around. Kind of seems to go against Scott Snyder's endgame there. I guess not technically, but...
It just kind of seems to go against the entire fucking 75 years of Batman comics where he didn't know who the Joker was.
Well, he's on the Metron chair, and the Metron chair is all-powerful. It knows everything. That's where Metron gets his knowledge from. So he starts off, he's just like, oh, who killed my parents? And the chair is just like, Joe Chill. And then you don't hear what the chair says, but Batman's like, yeah, Joe Hill, that's correct. He's like, what's the Joker's real identity? And then it's silent for a second, and Batman's just like, no way. Like, that can't be. And then it just, it ends there. It goes on at that point. So far, I'm really digging the story. I think this is kind of an interesting route to take. Kind of subbing in some of the Justice League into these kind of new gods situations, and we know this is not going to be the only one because of something else we will be talking about later. But
it's all these foreshadowing things that we're just like,
yeah. But Batman as Metron is an idea that like there's kind of endless possibilities, so it's kind of cool, and we'll see where it goes. But anyway, Dusty is now no longer with us. He has been phased out.
God rest his soul.
Yeah. Ant-Man's a rough gig. But anyway, we are going to talk about some comic news, most of this coming out of the San Diego Comic-Con, and there's a good chunk of it, so we're going to get going through it as fast as we can.
Yeah,
and
what we're doing different, I guess like Andrew mentioned earlier, we're going to do all the movie and TV news next week. Next week we're actually going to be recording on Tuesday like we used to do because of the scheduling thing. So instead of trying to like fake it, we're just going to
talk about
the movies.
We'll highlight some comics that we might think will be good that we're going to probably buy that week,
yeah.
But we're mostly going to talk about the movie side of things and any other comics news that may have trickled out in the meantime. But anyway, why don't you go ahead? We got some Star Wars stuff leading us off here, so why don't you go ahead and get us going there?
All right, so Chewbacca is going to be getting a 5-issue miniseries. It's starting in October. Thank you. And it's going to follow the Battle of Yavin. So I guess
it's
going to be...
post-episode 4.
Yeah, post-episode 4, pre-episode 5. Jerry Duggan is writing it with Phil Noto on art.
And Phil Noto is great.
Fucking awesome, honestly. And they showed some of the promo stuff, or the pieces of art, and it looks pretty damn good. So none of the Star Wars books have really failed me at this point, so I'm definitely going to be picking this one up. Staying on the Star Wars kick, Star Wars and Darth Vader, the two series from Marvel, are going to be crossing over for Star Wars Vader Down. It's going to be a 6-issue series, which revolves around a do-or-die mission by the Rebels to take down a stranded Darth Vader. Jason Aaron and Kieran Gillen are going to be teaming up on writing, and Salvador LaRocca and Mike Diodato will be on art. The crossover debuts in November, and it's going to start with the oversized Vader Down #1, and it's going to continue in Star Wars and Darth Vader. it doesn't say how long. Well, it's a six-part series, so I guess it's going to be a three-month mini.
I'd like to add, that didn't take long. Shit.
What do you mean?
For a crossover.
Oh, yeah.
And they've got a big event coming in the Star Wars universe, too. So it looks
well,
like Marvel
I mean,
really is just it's more comics to them.
Here's the thing. You're not reading the books, right?
Not regularly, no.
Okay. Star Wars and Darth Vader are kind of happening. They're happening concurrently. And kind of things in those books are happening from different angles.
Mm-hmm.
Because Darth Vader is obviously about Vader. And Star Wars is focusing more on the rebel side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Luke, Han, and Leia. So I think it kind of makes sense that they're gonna hit a convergence point.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's not that bad. Like, I would honestly think most people that are reading Star Wars are probably reading Darth Vader as well. Like, I really don't see why. Like, it's not like there's a dip in quality between the books.
Sure.
You know, so if you're gonna be picking both of them up or only picking one of them up, like, you're definitely gonna be getting something good, because Jason Aaron and Karen Gillan are doing a bang up job on Star Wars.
This fan's excited.
Yes, sir.
Let's see. So, we're halfway through Secret Wars. Are we? Did we get issue 4? Yeah,
issue
we did.
Four came
so we're halfway
August.
Through.
Yeah.
They're still claiming it's going to end in October, which...
I doubt it.
No, it's not happening. But we're going to have some new series that are going to be coming up. We're going to have Secret Wars, Agents of Atlas number 1. It's only going to be a one-shot, but it's going to be written by Tom Taylor of Injustice and Superior Iron Man,
yeah.
And drawn by Steve Pugh, who did Animal Man with Jeff Lemire,
and
amongst other things.
Did he also
New Invaders with Robinson?
I think so. Did he also do Iron Fist? I feel like he did some Iron Fist. No, I'm thinking Travel for him.
You are.
Yeah.
It will take place on a battle world domain ruled by Baron Zemo, where the Agents of Atlas serve as an underground resistance group trying to free their leader, Jimmy Woo, from Zemo's clutches.
I'm just wondering, like, with all the other tie-ins, where does this tie-in really fit in? It's just kind of like...
Seems random.
Yeah, like the Agents
Not that
of Atlas...
The Agents of Atlas were a cult series to begin with, so it's a little strange to see them making a big comeback.
I mean, I know it was popular when it came out a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Several years, I don't know how long ago, it's been a while. But it's not exactly like there's a clamoring for it. So, it's interesting to see that they're putting this out. Maybe it's kind of like a... Well, it's taken longer than we thought, so...
Something
to
kind of fill the gaps.
Yeah.
Not unheard of.
Marvel announced it's going to be releasing Avengers number 0, which is going to kind of serve as like a Marvel point 1 issue to the entire,
all different Marvel.
Yeah, post-Secret Wars.
A primer, if you will.
Yep, so it's gonna set the stage for the new and relaunched books, and it's going to contain short stories setting up the all-new, all-different Avengers by Wade and Azrar, Squadron Supreme by James Robinson and Leonard Kirk, A-Force by G. Willow Wilson and Victor Ibanez, New Avengers by Al Ewing and Gerardo Sandoval, The Ultimates by Al Ewing and Kenneth Rocafort, and Uncanny Avengers by Jerry Duggan and Ryan Stegman. And hopefully Marvel's smart enough to at least give a couple weeks between this issue and, like, the relaunch.
Hopefully.
Because they have the tendency to release things like this, like, day off, you know.
They do.
Something stupid.
And it ends up being something that you kind of need to read.
Also, hopefully, it's reasonably priced, because I think the last time they did something like this
was like
$7. It was ridiculously priced. The thing is, I do think... It would be a good purchase because
mm-hmm.
you kind of could get a feel for, like, all right, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be picking up all new, all different Avengers. I'm, like,
sure.
99% sure.
I probably will, too, because it's weight.
Squadron Supreme and A-Force, I'm interested in, but I'm not 100% on board.
This actually, if I pick this up, it'll probably actually be my primer for trying Squadron Supreme.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It'll be a
Which
good
I guess is the point.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, some interesting stuff here. I'm totally off board all the rest of these, though.
Yeah, New Avengers, Ultimates, and Uncanny Avengers, I have really no interest in. But, you know what? This is their chance to sway me, so hopefully...
It is. And,
something good.
Deadpool fans have something to look forward to. The classic Deadpool team of Joe Kelly and Ed McGuinness. Ed McGuinness is kind of an MIA there for a while on interiors of comics.
Yeah, he's been doing a lot of covers.
They're going to be working on a Spider-Man Deadpool team-up book and set in the post-Secret Wars universe. None of the details are available except that those two guys are doing it, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
I really like Joe Kelly's writing, and he just kind of dropped off of mainstream comics there, so maybe this is kind of his step back in.
Well, the thing is, it's like, he created Deadpool, right? Or
no, that was Louise Simonson and Rob Liefeld.
Okay. Well, I know he did some big stuff.
He's one of the first people that really turned him into the comedy character.
Because
let's be real, Rob Liefeld's Deadpool is Deathstroke.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't become Deadpool until later.
Yeah.
The
Deadpool we know and love, in quotes, I suppose.
Yes.
I'm not a huge Deadpool fan. And
neither am
I. Honestly, I kind of tend to avoid things that are headlined by Deadpool, but with Joe Kelly attached. Because
his Justice League run from back in the day is probably one of the most underrated Justice League runs of all time.
Yeah,
he did some issues
on Superman or Action Comics.
He did the What's So Funny About Your Justice the American Way.
Yeah.
Which is
a great
single
issue.
Superman.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the best Superman stories of the last 15 years. That's not All-Star Superman. Some interesting stuff. And like I said, I'd like to see him on some more big stuff. It'd be cool. Anyway, switching over to DC now. In honor of Robin's 75th anniversary. 75 years of ruining Batman.
Wow.
Hey, Robin completely fucked with Batman's dynamic. Because let's be real, Batman is the dark, brooding character in the shadows. Let's introduce a bright red sidekick that completely throws that off.
Well, they did it for a reason, drawing those kids.
They did,
because
as we all know, comics are for kids and kids only.
Absolutely.
As are superhero movies. If you make a superhero movie for an adult, you suck.
Yeah, Suicide Squad,
how did you not make that movie for kids?
Adults, it's going to go watch them.
No kidding. Anyway, we're joking. Don't hate us.
Do hate us.
But Batman, so one of the big things they're going to be doing is the sequel to Batman Eternal will be called Batman and Robin Eternal. James Tynion will serve as the lead writer with Scott Snyder, Tim Seeley, Genevieve Valentine, who's doing Catwoman, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Orlando, who's doing Midnighter, I think. And Jackson Lansing, Colin Kelly, and Ed Brisson. Contributing to story arcs, Tony Daniel, Paul Pelletier, and Scott Eaton, amongst others, will be on the art. It'll debut October 7th and ship weekly for 6 months, so you're looking at about 25 issues.
Yep.
So that'll be pretty cool. I know Batman Eternal was pretty well received all around, and this is a lot of the same people coming back, and it should be pretty good.
I'm thinking I'm going to skip this one, just considering I bought all the issues of Batman Eternal and read three of them. I don't know why I did that, honestly.
It'll all be on sale eventually. Robin War is going to be the other one, though. It's going to be a month-long crossover in December that links Robin, Son of Batman, Gotham Academy, and We Are Robin. Tom King will write two bookend specials, and the entire crossover will last 5 weeks. That's a nice one. Done in and out real quick.
Yeah. I didn't know Tom King apparently used to work with the CIA.
Did he?
Yeah, so because in one of the interviews or one of the panels,
I thought that was
JFK.
Oh, no, I guess that was him.
Yeah. Well, he writes, or I think he co-writes Grayson.
He does.
And someone asked him if any of the things he experienced in the CIA would show up in Grayson. He's like, I literally can't talk about that.
I
literally can't tell you.
This was announced by Jeff Johns at his panel, and it's kind of actually annoying. He announced Justice League Gods and Men. It's going to be 6 standalone issues focusing on characters affected by the Darkseid War. The creative teams actually have been announced. Hold on 1 second. Go ahead and take it for a second while I look those up. All right.
The creative teams have been announced, and we know the issues are going to focus on. So it's 6 issues, and there's going to be one for Batman, Superman, Green Lantern, Lex Luthor, Flash, and Shazam. And it's coming out in October,
Okay, so right now, in October, we're going to have Justice League 45, which is actually going to have art and cover by Francis Manapul, as he jumps into the Darkseid War. The second wave of the war begins in issue 45. So they've announced the 6 issues. My annoyance is that they made it appear like Jeff Johns was writing these, but he is not. But there's some decent talent in here, so... Justice League Gods and Men Batman number 1, which will feature Teeter Tomasi writing. You know, he's a pretty great Batman writer. And Fernando Casarin drawing. And the solicitation is the Darkseid War rages on. Batman's role in Gotham City and the world alters drastically as he's forced to accept his new role as the God of Knowledge at the end of Justice League 42. We've got Justice League Gods and Men Flash number 1, which is by Rob Williams, who does Martian Manhunter, art by Jesus Marino. Basically, the Flash is forced to take on the Black Racer. And can he win? We've got Justice League Gods of Men Green Lantern, written by Tom King and drawn by Evan Shaner, who did the who drew the Shazam Convergence issues. Basically, the Green Lantern Corps is going to be threatened by a strange extinction-level event, and only Jon Stewart and Hal Jordan can remain to save the Corps and themselves from joining Darkseid's army forever. I think the rumor I heard is that Darkseid was going to try to turn Oa into a parademon factory.
Okay.
We've got Superman number one. This is actually going to be written by Francis Manapal, and has going to have art by Bong Adazo, who actually did some Deadpool stuff back in the day. Evolving into a god of strength, Superman has become an angry, violent brute, but one unlikely hero can save him. It's Lex Luthor.
Oh.
And speaking of which, we've got Justice League Gods and Men Lex Luthor number one, also by Francis Manapal and Bong Adazo. Lex Luthor has gained the power of a god, but his one failure continues to deny him the peace he craves, and only a crazed Superman can help him get it.
Huh.
Basically, I think Lex Luthor ends up ruling Apocalypse. And then our last one is Justice League Gods and Men Shazam, written by Steve Orlando from Midnighter and drawn by artist extraordinaire Scott Collins. A boy becomes an army of gods. No longer has Billy Batson had access to the powers of the old gods. Now he commands the combined might of High Father Mantis and other new gods. But these gods are not passive, and they will sooner destroy Billy than give up control of their power. That's actually a really interesting twist on Shazam.
Yeah.
To make his powers as High Father Mantis, that's the H in the end. He's got to find some other ones. So that's pretty cool. I am a little annoyed that Johns isn't writing those, but there's a couple of those that if they're good enough, I might have to go check them out. And,
I wonder how these would hold up for someone that's not reading.
That's an interesting question. I think a lot of them are going to be naturally make a lot more sense if you've been reading Darkseid War, but I think that Batman one might be pretty excessive.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that Batman by Peter Tomasi, considering he pretty much crushed it on Batman and Robin,
yeah.
That's the one that speaks to me. So,
and it's him writing that one, actually, of all those, is the one that makes the most sense to me, because he does a great job with Batman.
Okay.
And if anyone's going to be able to take that concept and make it even cooler, it'll probably be him. More DC, basically spinning out of Convergence now, so fans of the old, the pre-New 52 universe might be interested in this one, but we're going to have Superman, Lois, and Clark, written by Dan Jurgens, drawn by Lee Weeks. This is the Superman Convergence team reuniting to basically continue that story. It's basically going to have Superman and Lois Lane and their 9-year-old son are going to kind of be and having adventures in this book, and it's they're going to be surviving on a world that's not their own.
They're billed as the last son of Krypton, daughter of Earth. So,
yep.
So it's pretty neat.
And yeah, it could be interesting. And so we've got Telos, written by Jeff King, not Tom King, Jeff King, who also wrote Convergence, with art by Carlo Pagliaian.
Wait, Jeff King wrote Convergence?
Yes.
All right, so we know which one we're not getting.
Yes.
Yeah, basically.
And not only that, it's continuing the story of Telos, who was the star of Convergence. So yeah, I'm not too interested in that one. But it'll look good, drawn by Carlo Pagliaian and Jason Paz. And then we've got Titans Hunt. This is written by Dan Abnett with art by Paulo Sequeira. And it's being touted as the secret history of the Teen Titans. God knows it's got to be better than the Teen Titans in the New 52.
God knows.
New gods know.
So we've got two new Superman series coming out. You get The Coming Superman, which is going to be a 6-issue miniseries written and drawn by Neil Adams. It's going to be set outside continuity, similar to Batman Odyssey. The story is supposed to pit Superman against Darkseid and Kalibak, which is complicated by the emergence of three new heroes from the bottled city of Kandor, who are forced to join forces with Lex Luthor to oppose Darkseid. This is coming out mid-November. And
not even close.
Yeah. No. Well,
not even trying it.
Anyway, if this is anything like Batman Odyssey, not with a 10-foot goddamn clown pole.
No.
Like, not gonna touch this book at all, because I don't know what the fuck happened to Neil Adams, but...
Yeah, but no.
I don't know.
So now we've got the other one that's a little bit more interesting.
Superman American Alien by Max Landis of Chronicle fame, the movie, and a rotating team of artists including Jock, Nick Dragotta, Tommy Lee Edwards, Joel Jones, Jay Lee, Francis Manapal, and Jonathan
Pace. You butchered the fuck out of Francis Manapal's name there.
I misspelled it. I put CES instead of CIS.
And it's Manapal.
Whatever.
But anyway, and Jonathan Cates with Ryan Sook on covers. Each of its 7 issues will take place in a different point in Clark's life as he evolves from farm boy to superhero, also coming in November. He's kind of touting this as the anti-All-Star Superman, which doesn't instill a lot of faith in me, because why would you want to discredit All-Star Superman? Max Landis is somebody that I have mixed feelings about. I think Chronicle was a pretty good movie, but I think that I think the geek community in general almost overinflates what he thinks to the point they give him a lot more credit than I think he deserves. Mm-hmm. And I had, like, outside Chronicle, I don't know if I've seen anything he's done outside his videos he does about the death of Superman and shit, where it's just him sitting in a chair talking. So I'll check it out. I mean, it's a good art team. Jock, Manipul, Case, Edwards. So we'll see. We'll see. But yeah. Speaking of Superman, though, Gene Lung Yang and Greg Pak also mentioned that Justice, the storyline following Truth, will focus on a depowered Superman struggling to defend his new home. You can give some ideas of what the third one might be called. I think they're going to be kind of looking at Superman kind of rediscovering. It sounds like it's grounded, but not shitty. It's grounded in a way.
Grounded, but not shitty?
Yes.
Oh, okay, grounded, you mean the storyline
yes.
grounded. All right, Yeah.
It sounds like grounded, but not shitty. And I think it's kind of... And the fact that they have that kind of out to make him depowered, I think gives them a better lens to examine that.
Well, it makes a little more sense than grounded, because in grounded, he just decided, okay, I'm just going to walk, or I'm not going to use my powers. Where in this, it's like he can't. Yeah, it makes it a little different. It gives a little more weight to
these guys are also way better fucking writers. But, yeah, so, awesome. But Scott Snyder, moving on to Batman, has given us some insight into his new storyline on Batman. As you guys know, this is the Robotech Bunny Batman, played by Jim Gordon.
Yep.
But Bruce Wayne is alive. And it's... Snyder said the storyline isn't about taking him off the table, but turning the lens inward and examining him in a way we haven't seen before. And he's also, I think, stated that this is definitely not... it's not a fake out.
Yeah, no. Basically, he said that the Bruce Wayne we saw at the end of issue 42, or in issue 42, is the Bruce Wayne we know.
It's
not like he doesn't remember that he was Batman. It's not a ruse. It's not a mistaken identity or amnesia thing. It's just a kind of examining him as the character outside of Batman.
Right.
You know, like, I guess let someone else take up the mantle and see what happens. So it's interesting that they're just kind of saying that at the outset.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
It shows that this isn't necessarily a temporary thing with Gordon as Batman.
Yeah.
Well, it will be temporary in the long run, but it might be longer than we thought it was.
Everything in comics is temporary. It's just a matter of how temporary.
Yeah. But here's something I'm really excited about. Grant Morrison has announced his return to the Multiversity franchise with multiple all-new graphic novels titled Multiversity 2, 2 spelled T-O-O. The plan is to revisit the universe for Multiversity, starting with Multiversity 2, The Flash, in 2016. Morrison also announced that he is working on a sequel to Batman Black and White, where he plans to recruit several leading comic book artists to draw the comic in a black and white style format, I believe also as original graphic novels. I believe those are going to be graphic novels as well. But this is super cool. Grant Morrison, I think when his book was coming out, Super Gods, he did a quick Q&A on Goodreads. Mm-hmm. And they actually asked fans, they like sent me a message. I'm like, hey, you like Grant Morrison? Do you have any questions you'd like to ask him? And I did. And I was like, well, you've done Batman, you've done Superman. And even at that point, Wonder Woman Earth 1 was coming. So this was like 5 years ago.
Jeez. That never came out, did it?
It's going to. Paquette finished the art earlier this year.
Okay.
And that's pretty much been the major holdup, is Paquette is not fast.
What's he been up to? I haven't seen him.
Paquette?
Is it just
drawing Wonder Woman Earth 1? That's what he's been up to. Basically did Swamp Thing, and Swamp Thing pushed it back too, because he wanted to keep doing Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
And then came back to Swamp Thing a couple of times. But he's Raptor, Wonder Woman Earth 1, I think comes out this fall. I don't remember the day. It's on Amazon, you can pre-order it. But so that is coming. So at that point, he'd done Batman, he'd done Superman, he had Wonder Woman coming. I was like, I asked him, I was like, do you have any plans for anybody else, like The Flash or something like that? And he actually said, I actually do have an idea for The Flash. He's like, I don't know when I'll get around to doing it, but I'll probably do it eventually. But he said it wasn't a typical superhero thing, and that it was more like Groundhog Day. Those were his actual words. And
yeah.
I was like, well, now. And so I'm kind of wondering if this might be where he finally gets to tell his big Flash story. And I'm like, I'm down with that.
I mean, that sounds pretty damn interesting.
It sounds very Grant Morrison, too, though. So I'm down with that. So Grant Morrison, not as done with DC as he may have appeared to be. And graphic novels, I think, kind of just allow him to write everything in one big chunk and be done with it. And then kind of work on his other stuff.
Yeah,
like
I mean, the good thing about graphic novels is you're not tied into any monthly schedule.
No, it's just done when it's done.
Yeah.
Grant Morrison, and he's got shit tons of other stuff coming up, but I'm glad he's still making the time for some superheroes, because
yep.
I do like his superhero work. Let's take the next one.
DC's planning on teaming up Batman 66 with John Steed and Emma Peel. They're characters from the British spy television show The Avengers. No creative team or release date has been given. So basically, we know this is coming.
Yeah. Morrison actually wrote a Steed and Mrs. Peel series back in the day. And Mark Waid did as well for Boom. Morrison's was actually from a long time ago, and I think Boom reprinted it. And then Waid did another series as well. So that'll be interesting. Speaking of Earth One, actually, now that it's. JMS has announced that he is doing Flash Earth One.
Yeah.
And the crowd goes mild. And Francis Manapul is doing Aquaman Earth 1. Now, Francis Manapul doing Aquaman Earth 1 is pretty cool because he's going to do all the art. So it's going to look amazing, if anything.
Absolutely.
JMS doing Flash Earth 1, not so sure about because the Superman Earth 1s aren't good.
I just have a feeling like he doesn't have a grasp on Superman.
As much as he likes to make
you
think.
Yeah, because like I've read a lot of, you know, a good amount of JMS stuff, and it's good. It's generally good. Like his Thor run was great.
His Thor run is still is arguably for me like number two behind Simonson.
Yeah, definitely.
Like that was one where he got it. He nailed it. And Superman Earth One and his Superman run are just not good.
Well, I mean, I think what was the first issue of Grounded good?
No.
I think it was.
The first issue of Grounded was okay. I endorsed the issue when it came out, but then as it went on, I just finally had to be like, this is shit.
Yeah.
I couldn't do it anymore.
Poo from my butt.
No kidding. I think I'm actually going to get rid of my Earth One graphic novels.
The only reason I have it is because it's signed by
both
Shane
of mine
Davis,
are,
yeah.
And I don't think that's enough of a reason for me to keep them.
Yeah.
So some lucky half-price customer.
Yeah.
So keep a lookout at half-price. we have no timeline on those new Earth One books, but it does show that DC is finally expanding out the Earth One line. They've done now Batman, Superman, Teen Titans, Wonder Woman, Flash, and now Aquaman. The Aquaman appears to be Hook and Beard Aquaman, but we'll see what he does with it and see if he comes up with something interesting.
That's kind of interesting to take that Hook and Beard.
Hybrid Aquaman.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Eisners, the winners that we care about, naturally, Saga took home a good amount of art, good amount of awards, including Best Continuing Series and Best Pencil or Inker for Fiona Staples. Well-deserved, although it should have gone to Southern Bastards.
Well, Best Continuing Series. Best New Series, maybe.
Yeah. Well, Best New Series and Best Publication for Teens went to Lumberjanes, which is also very good, I hear. And Best Writer actually went to Gene Lung Yang for Avatar The Last Airbender and The Shadow of Hero. And I actually, we really liked his first issue of Superman, and we're ready for issue two. Best Digital Webcomic went to Private Eye by Brian K. Vaughan and Marcus Martin, which will be getting print versions from Image soon.
Yeah.
Although I'm probably going to go onto their website and just download the whole thing for $5. It's pay what you want. You can technically get it for free.
Yeah, actually, you can get it for free.
It seems pointless to pay for issues when you can just go online and get it for free. Some people need that physical copy, though. And best cover artist went to Darwin Cook, and not me anymore. I finally gotten out of it. So interesting. So pretty much the expected takers. A lot of Brian K. Vaughan, a lot of Saga, and Gene Lung Yang taking Best Writer. That was didn't see that one coming.
All things Avatar: The Last Airbender, and to be honest, I don't know what Shadow of Hero is.
Mm-hmm.
But still, Avatar.
I actually have it. A lot of his stuff is at half price for a while, really cheap, so I bought it. So I've been doing some research. I'm trying to read all his stuff, getting ready for Superman. But anyway, we got a couple of other tidbits here. DC and IDW are joining forces for Batman, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Which this is pretty damn cool.
The miniseries will see Krang transport TMNT and Shredder to Gotham City in hopes of getting rid of his enemies for good. The series will be written by James Tynion IV of Talon and Batman fame, and drawn by Freddie E. Williams, with Kevin Eastman and unnamed artists providing variant covers. This is one I might have to get with the Eastman covers, if they got Batman on them, just seeing Kevin Eastman draw Batman.
Yeah, that would be
And the first issue will hit in Novembers, as you wrote, Novembers.
Novembers.
But it's definitely not something that I would have expected, so it's pretty
cool.
Well,
I mean, Star Trek and Green Lantern make a little more sense, but they are doing a Star Trek and Green Lantern crossover, which started last week, I think?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess if TMNT is going to team up with anyone for
it'd
DC,
be Batman.
Yeah. Superman will just kind of be like,
flying around. Yeah, I mean, because they're ninjas and Batman's sort of a ninja, so it makes sense.
He's not sort of a ninja, he is a ninja.
Yeah, I guess.
He's a ninja that purposely wears a dark outfit that everyone can see to scare you. Like, that's how much of a badass he is. Think about it.
It is true. Milestone Comics are coming back. They formed that new Milestone company a while back, but I was kind of curious what their plans were.
I think they announced it was called Milestone 2.0. That was earlier this year, I think. And, they just
and so nothing came, but now... So they are coming back thanks to a partnership with DC, and it's going to be graphic novels. They're going to plan to publish two graphic novels along with a small number of miniseries and one-shots. The stories are going to feature characters like Static, Zombie, Hardware, Icon, and Rocket, along with new heroes and villains, and Geoff Johns and Jim Lee are going to be involved in some capacity. The implication given, I think, was that they were going to be writing and drawing something. So,
well, it's a good thing they're doing hardcovers, because
again,
Jim Lee...
Well, I doubt he's doing a whole hardcover material.
That's true.
I'm sure he's just doing like a one-shot or something. At most, a one-shot. But so it was pretty cool to see them coming back. I know that they've got... a big cult following with Milestone for the stuff that they were doing, kind of using... Because the big thing that Milestone did is they introduced characters of color that weren't gimmicks. They weren't like stereotypes, and they were just characters. Like Icon is basically Superman. And, I mean, he's just Black Superman. But and that's simplifying it. But there wasn't a gimmick to it. It was part of his heritage. It was part of who he was. But it wasn't like Luke Cage in the 70s or anything like that. Where
it's just, we need a black guy.
Like Afro Man and all that. It's pretty cool to see them back. And in a big way. And I think original creators too, like Dennis Cowan and guys like that, are going to be involved too.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool.
Apache Chief.
Thunderbird on Uncanny X-Men and all that. No, is it Thunderbird? Yes, yeah, Thunderbird dies and he's supposed to be
Warpath.
Like Thunderbird is in an issue before he dies. And it gets replaced by his twin brother, Warpath. And then, kind of wrapping it up, Joss Whedon announced a new miniseries from Dark Horse called Twixt. It's actually Twixt, not Twist.
Sure.
It's an X. There's an X in there, I think.
We're about to find out.
But it's coming next year, and it's going to be the driving question. The driving question behind the series is going to be, why isn't there a female Victorian Batman?
Why?
No, why not? I mean, honestly. Who?
No,
why?
Twist? Right there. Twist with an S.
Oh, whatever. Somebody I saw it as Twixt.
Sure.
I fuck you.
Wow, okay.
What a dynamite argument, Andrew. That broadcast school really paid off. but yeah, so it's pretty cool to see Whedon back on Multi Comics. He's been off doing Avengers Land.
He's taking some time away from comics. Work.
Takes some time off from comics, kind of stretching his wings, trying some other things, and when I was back in kind of a big way with comics now, 6-issue mini for Dark Horse, because he hasn't full-on written a comic in a long time. For good reason. I mean, he's been basically doing Marvel movies since, like, 2010. So it's been, like, 5 years of his life that he's been off doing that stuff, so he's finally coming back and kind of stepping back in, at least for a little while.
Some people were saying, like, after he finished Avengers 2, he just looked rough.
Oh, and I don't doubt it. People, those are just, they're Herculean tasks, almost.
Oh, yeah. Especially you have to adhere to that strict schedule, and I'm sure Kevin Feige is looking over your shoulder and making sure that everything's in line.
Oh, yeah. It's like, I imagine doing some of the smaller movies, like, I imagine Scott Scott Derrickson, I think the guy's doing Doctor Strange. He's probably not under nearly as much pressure as Michael Waiden was, because like he's got Doctor Strange, and it is the first installment of a franchise. But like the pressure you're under with Avengers: Age of Ultron, that's ridiculous. It's insane.
Well, that actually begs an interesting question. I mean, moving forward, like Ant-Man comes out tonight, you know,
already out in some places.
Well, yeah. and then you've got the next big movie is Captain America.
Civil
then you've
War.
Got like, Captain America. It's still Captain America,
yeah.
But yeah. Then you've got like Doctor Strange, and eventually you're gonna have Black Panther, and then Captain Marvel, and you wonder if these movies are gonna draw that attention, you know? Because I mean, technically Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, there were no one knew who the fuck Guardians of the Galaxy were before that movie came out.
Guardians benefited massively from Chris Pratt and word of mouth.
Oh, yeah. No, Chris Pratt sold that movie.
And word of mouth. And Doctor Strange will benefit tremendously from Cumberbatch.
Cucumber Patch,
whatever it is. Cumber Snitch.
Cumber Snitch.
I feel dirty. Black Panther's going to be interesting, because I think he'll benefit from having the high-profile Captain America moment.
Yeah.
So I think that'll help fuel his movie, because it's not a huge star that's going to be anchoring it or anything. Captain Marvel, I think, will also depend on who's going to be in it. There was a rumor recently, I forget who said was going to be in it, but it was that Marvel, the rumors that Marvel is like heavily trying to court Angelina Jolie to be Captain Marvel, direct it, not star in it, but, Ava, the woman who directed Selma, I forget her name.
I can't remember her name.
She passed on Black Panther officially, apparently. It's going to be interesting seeing how these new franchises fare. But we're still going to have, you know, like we got Captain America 3 next year. We've got Thor 3 in 2017.
Yeah,
and
there's
then
a lot
got,
of big stuff coming.
We got, and then we've got Infinity War coming in 18 and 19.
The thing is, like, you gotta remember is that Iron Man wasn't a big name when it came out.
No.
Like, he was, you know, geeks in the movie.
And, like, who would have thought the Guardians would have taken off and just been as insanely popular as it was? I don't think anybody saw that coming. I mean, I expected it was gonna be good, but, like, I never. But I remember when it was the lead up to the release, people were like, Marvel has found its first flop and shit like that.
Yeah.
Like, everyone was like, oh, it's not gonna be. And it's like, man, fucking. It came out and it fucking did gangbusters business and became like the third highest grossing Marvel film of all time. Fourth.
What's the third?
I think it's both Avengers, Iron Man 3, and then Guardians.
Makes sense.
Because Iron Man 3 benefited from that Avengers boost and made like $1 billion.
It also benefited from RDJ.
Well, Iron Man 3 did way bigger business than Iron Man 1 or 2.
Well, yeah.
Iron Man 3 is probably the theme. Avengers and Iron Man are probably the high points of the superhero genre. I don't know if it'll ever go higher than that. Batman Superman, simply off the fact it's Batman Superman, is gonna do gangbusters. What?
No, it's good. It just looks so fucking good.
I do. That newest trailer, man. Fuck. Even like the Man of Steel haters, like a lot of people I knew that didn't like it, kind of watched it, and they were just like, So Batman is me watching Man of Steel, basically. We'll talk a little bit more about that next week, but that trailer just looked fucking awesome. And Jeffrey Dean Morgan's playing Thomas Wayne, which is cool, because I like Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Yeah.
So a lot of cool shit coming, but we'll talk more about the movie stuff next week, because there's a shit ton of that to talk about, too, plus some stuff that was just announced.
I actually think there's more movie and television stuff that came out of San Diego than comic stuff.
I don't doubt it, because Marvel just unveiled like the all-new, all-different Marvel Now stuff like right before San Diego.
Yeah.
Weren't there a couple of new Spider-Man books announced?
I don't think so. I didn't see any.
Let me see. But typically speaking, San Diego usually is the big comics release, but they don't. This year they were just very skim on that. Hold on.
Well, I mean, they did their Cup of Joe panel, but honestly, I think everything had been kind of announced up until that point. It's like, so they were just kind of like, I read about the panel, and they were just kind of fielding questions, and like Greg Pak talked a little about the all-new, all-different Hulk, or whatever they're calling it, Totally Awesome Hulk, and he basically said, by the end of the first issue, you're going to know exactly who's on the cover.
Right.
Like, they're...
Because they're doing another bait and switch.
Yeah, they're pretty much just, you might probably be able to tell once the, what you call it, the, who is this? The silhouette.
Well, they did a silhouette now that I have Thor's head on it.
Really?
That Joe Quesada's panel. And,
well, he said it was going to be someone that people knew, and it was going to be someone that would enjoy being the Hulk, which still sounds like Amadeus Cho.
Yeah.
And the storyline behind this is more about where's Bruce Banner than who is the new Hulk.
Right.
So, you know, there's that. And apart from that, you know, there didn't really seem to be any big Marvel news to come out of SCC, except for the Star Wars stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we're going to get even more Star Wars stuff at D23.
Oh, yeah, that'll be where all the Marvel movie stuff happens. I was surprised DC didn't unveil the Justice League. I expected DC to do, well, to have their cast.
Mm-hmm.
Because that Justice League Part 1 is coming out in 2017, so they're going to have to get rolling on that soon.
True, but
that might be next year's big thing.
I honestly think they can do that next year after Batman and Superman comes out, and I guess, will it be after Suicide Squad or before?
Just before, I think. I think Suicide Squad's August.
Yeah, so they can do you've seen
an actual Suicide Squad panel too, because Suicide Squad basically just had a couple minutes.
Yeah.
And I liked the Suicide Squad trailer. I thought it was good. I don't understand the haters.
You never understand
the haters. I like the way Apocalypse looks too. Don't understand the haters. All these people are saying it looks like fucking Ivan Ooze, and I was like, fuck you.
You know what? I was trying to put my finger on it.
Die.
No. I mean, honestly, his face does look a little more wrinkly than you would expect. But then, you don't really, you know, in comics he's kind of drawn kind of flat and imposing. Yeah.
I saw people in other posts. I was like, when cosplayers do better than a Hollywood production, it's like the movie Apocalypse next to like the comic book Apocalypse.
I
was just like, what the God damn it. This is why we can't have nice things, guys.
Well, I mean, the thing is that just because it looks awesome in a still shot doesn't mean it looks awesome moving.
It doesn't.
You
because
know?
You think the thing like that is, you know, like I said, there's an Egyptian vibe to it. There's a lot of stuff going on. And it's still got a lot of hallmarks to the classic Apocalypse. And I'm like, people are like, it doesn't look anything like Apocalypse. It looks fucking exactly like Apocalypse.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, everybody's like, you should be towering over these guys. And I was like, look, this movie isn't going to suck if Apocalypse is a foot shorter than he's supposed to be.
Well, that's the thing. It's the funny thing is that so many movies and television shows and comic books have come out, and people are just like, oh, let me fucking blast it because of this one fucking image or this one fucking trailer.
Yeah.
You'd think we, as comic book fans, would learn.
Oh, I had a friend that said, an acquaintance, I guess, that was like, he thought Bane in Dark Knight Rises was one of the stupidest villains ever. Like, he thought the way he looked, the way he talked, he thought it was all dumb. And he's like, Leto's Joker is on par to be even worse than Hardy's Bane. And I was like, dude, like, Leto is like the moment in that trailer everybody was waiting for. Like,
yeah.
Like, the Joker in motion actually looks fine to me. Like, there's no issues with him.
The funny thing is, I actually saw someone posted on Reddit, and they said the grill or the fake teeth or whatever they are actually kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Because you would think that someone, I mean, he's obviously been around long enough to take out Robin.
Mm-hmm.
His mouth has probably been busted in a shitload of times.
Dude, I said that when they first showed that picture. I was like, those are fillings, because Batman keeps knocking his fucking teeth out.
I must have missed that in all the fan rage.
Because you guys were trashing the shit out of that.
Look, like I said, the still image, I fell into that same camp of someone that
is.
I was just destroying something.
I thought it looked really cool, but that was what I said. I was like, because that's the thing, too, is that Joker has been around almost as long as Batman has, which is 20 years at this point. Because it was like somebody, I had a friend that was like, somebody had come up with a fan theory that this Joker was actually Jason Todd, and I was like, what are you basing that off of? Like, where did this come from? Like, where did you pull this, out of your ass, this random idea that that Joker was actually Jason Todd? And they were like, but look at the age difference. And I was like, what age difference? Leto is older than Affleck is. Don't get me wrong. Leto is drinking from the fountain of youth. He's in the same thing Prince is, but like, he's as old as fucking...
I think it's the lake of, or the shores of Lake Minnetonka. Is that it?
Yeah, Lake Minnetonka. But yeah, it's just fucking ridiculous, and I'm just like, all right, whatever. I think it all looks good though, and I am like, I'm all the footage I've seen from everything just makes me immensely more excited. Like all the I saw a bootleg of the X-Men Apocalypse footage, looked awesome. Saw the Suicide Squad, the Batman and Superman. What was the other one that came out? Is there anything else?
Maybe.
Those are the big ones.
Yeah.
I wanted to say there's some other big trailer. Oh, the Star Wars one. The behind the scenes
footage
they showed.
That was cool.
That was cool. So like all this cool shit and everyone's still just gotta be a bunch of haters. What can you do? Anyway.
That is so crazy that Ben Affleck is younger than Jared Leto.
By a year.
It's by a year. I mean, it's not,
it's
like,
not a lot, but Affleck looks much older than Leto does.
I wouldn't go that far.
Leto, I don't know. Leto doesn't look 43, though.
I wouldn't say Ben Affleck looks 44 or 42 or however old he is.
I'd say he looks like he's late 30s, early 40s. Leto looks like he's 30. Like,
I mean,
it's ridiculous.
I guess.
Leto looks as old as me. If not younger than me. You know? Like, I read that he was 43, and I was like, no fucking way.
Maybe you look as old as Leto, man.
Maybe. Who knows? But, oh, God. Fuck you, man. Fuck. Anyway, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. We kept it short this week.
It's actually funny. We thought we were going to have, like, this long fucking episode because of all the stuff. Like,
but we breezed through it pretty quick.
Well, the thing is, like, I mean, San Diego is awesome because you get all this news. All these announcements, but that's really all you're getting.
You're getting announcements, you're not getting any sets or anything.
Yeah. So it's like, I mean, there was half the stuff on here was like, all right, we don't know who's working.
It's happening.
Yeah, it's
that's
like,
cool.
These things that are happening. What else are we going to say about it?
Exactly. So it's pretty cool. And we'll be back to you guys next week. We're going to talk about all the TV movie stuff, including some of the stuff we already just talked about, but plenty more next week. And yeah, we'll see you guys then. Hopefully, we'll have Dusty for the whole time then.
Hopefully.
Yeah. God rest his soul.
God rest his mother.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week. Thanks again for joining us.
See ya.